Maine, Maine, Maine Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife and the woods are just outside your doorway, so get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Hey, thank you, and good evening, one and all, and welcome to the Maine Outdoors, Maine's longest-running outdoor talk radio program. Actually, we're the longest-running talk radio program, outdoor talk radio program, in the entire United States.
I know. I'm proud to be sitting here with
you.
We're
proud of that.
Yeah.
And nice to have you on board tonight, you all, and we have an exciting program lined up tonight. We hope you'll stay with us for the whole hour. We'll introduce our special studio guests in just a moment. First, Norm, before I introduce you, did you see the sky tonight at sunset?
It was gorgeous.
Wasn't that something?
It was. When I look out the backside of my house towards the west, you know, I'm looking through woods.
Yeah.
And there's a beaver flowage.
Oh.
And then the sky is painted
salmon,
that way.
Salmon pink. Beautiful.
Oh, it was gorgeous.
And mackerel sky. Now, what does that bode? You must know what that bodes, right, for the weather? Mackerel sky?
I don't. Tell us.
What?
Tenley must know.
No.
Tell us, Tenley.
Rain.
Tenley.
Oh, rain. We got rain. Yeah.
Mackerel sky, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You bet. Anyway, we need the rain.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes, we do.
Yeah. Introduce our guests, but first the crew, the guy behind the switches and toggle switches and the rheostats in there, the man in the left seat with the nimble fingers, Norman Plord.
Good evening. And I looked at the weather forecast. It doesn't really look good for rain. It'll be overcast. But
oh, you don't think we'll get much rain?
Well, when I looked, because I'm going to Grand Lake Stream this week, and there were like some 17%.
Oh.
And I'm going, but overcast skies, I'm going, well, we don't mind the overcast skies, and the rain would be okay, too.
Yeah.
But it really didn't.
Well, hope you have good fishing.
Yeah, and the flowage is still like 421 when I checked today.
Good. That's not bad.
That's not bad considering very little rain for us.
Our co-host is a registered Maine guide. She's a member of the Fish and Wildlife Advisory Council. She loves to hunt and fish, and she is known as the pulchritudinous, vivacious, effervescent Catherine Gordon.
It is wonderful to be here.
Nice to have you here.
Can I have a dictionary?
I know. Some of those words, I don't know what they are.
Our guest tonight is, she's got quite a pedigree. She's a master Maine guide. She owned a Fish River Lodge up in at Eagle Lake, I believe that is.
Mm-hmm.
She has 25 years of guiding experience. She's guided moose hunters, bear hunters. She knows about fly fishing. In fact, she was named the Fly Rod Crosby Award of 2024. She's also a member of the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine Board of Directors. Welcome, Tenley Schofield.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's so much fun being on this side of the mic and actually seeing faces that go with the voices.
Nice to have you here tonight. We're going to talk about your career here in just a minute. And also going to hook up with Steve Dunham. Now, Steve is the regional wildlife guy down in Machias. And Steve was responsible for rescuing. Now, get this, folks. Listen to this carefully. He rescued a large moose from a well down in Pembroke.
It's an amazing story. It took them 5 hours to get that moose out of the well.
Did it really?
Yeah, amazing.
Well, we'll hook up with Steve, and he'll tell us all about it, and we'll do that in a couple minutes. We also have a trivia question tonight that's going to knock your socks off.
Yes.
to say the least.
Yeah, to say the least. Anyway, a couple of things here before we get to the digest. I want to remind you again that we have a phone number that you can call if you'd like to be part of our program. And what's that number, Catherine?
It is 1-800-966-1039.
Yes, and you're listening to us on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, 101.3 and 103.9 in the Queen City. Also, we're streaming online. We folks are listening to us all over the country. And by the way, Tony down there in Chicopee, one of our loyal listeners, I want you to know, Tony, that I had a little dinner party at my house last night, and your name came up, believe it or not. We got talking about anchovies.
Yeah, I was going to say the anchovies.
So the anchovy man, they mentioned you, and then we tried to remember the name of that famous dish. His name I can't pronounce, but that was made with anchovies. Remember we had a special show on anchovy? Anyway, your name came up, Tony, at Branch Lake, Maine. I just thought you'd like to know that. Let's see. I want to also remind you that we're sponsored every week in part by the Northwood Sporting Journal, Norm's favorite hunting and fishing publication.
And Tenley has a whole article on her, page 9, Guide Talk. It talks all about her in there.
Yeah, Catherine and I had a great meeting.
We had so much fun. Yeah, gotta check that out.
In the October issue, right?
In the October issue.
Oh, is that your article? That's your article?
That is my first article.
Inaugural.
Yes.
There you go. Anyway, we want to remind you that the October issue is out. If you want to read about Tenley Schofield or any other items, you can pick up a copy to newsstand. There's a, what's on the cover of that? A grouse, I think.
The grouse, yeah. It's a great picture of a grouse, too.
Grouse on the cover. So check it out. And if you would like to sign up for a subscription, you can call Alicia at the office. And her number is 732-4880. Be sure to check out our website at sportingjournal.com. For any advertising questions you may have, contact Tracy Grant, our ad lady, at 399-9905. Again, if you joined us late, our guest tonight is Tenley Schofield. She's got a pedigree a mile long. She's been a guide for 25 years. She knows her stuff, and we're going to talk to her in just a minute. First, the digest is on tap here. We have, Catherine, the second moose season starts tomorrow, right?
Yes, and so make sure, because I'm a grouse hunter, but make sure if you're grouse hunting that you do have that one piece of orange on.
Okay, it can be a vest or a hat, right?
A vest or a hat.
Okay, yep. So that starts tomorrow. That's the second, that's a bull season, isn't it? Isn't that right, Kenley?
Yes. Yep.
Tenley.
And yes, it's a bull season.
It's a bull season. Okay. And also, grouse season's in full swing. The reports we're getting, it's going to be a tough hunt on grouse so far.
I think so, yeah.
Everything we've heard. But anyway, it's just fun to get out there and enjoy the foliage and the fresh air. Let's see. What else?
They wanted us to remind people about using the paper roads, the logging
trucks.
Oh,
good point, yeah. Logging trucks are out there in full force. If you're driving the Golden Road or any of those trucking roads, be very careful. And if you see a truck coming, you see that big cloud of dust 2 miles away, pull over and wait for them.
Yeah, it's their roads, and we're very privileged. It's in this state of Maine to be able to use those roads, but it's by the grace of them letting us use them. So you want to use them so they don't close them off to us and be considerate. That's
right.
Their road. It's get out of their way and let them work.
You said that well.
Yeah.
Anyway, we also have a fishing report tonight. Norm probably forgot about that, but we know that,
do we have the music?
That he has his fingers right on the rheostat and he's going to bring in the band.
Yay!
I was waiting.
I like that music.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, Scotty said the other night, he was listening to the show, and he said, gee, Norm was really on target there. He's on everything. Everything was tight production schedule.
It was a rare night.
Yeah, one of those rare nights. Anyway, a fishing report, just a brief, we mentioned the Moosehead area last week. This week, Downey's fishing report, remember, you can cast and blast. You can fish in some areas and also hunt for grouse. And the fisheries biologist down east is recommending Echo Lake. That's on Mount Desert Island. Did you ever fish that, Norm?
Never have. Never fished on the island.
Yeah, some good fishing there. They've got brookies and salmon in there. And the other suggestion he's making, now these are open during October. Not all the waters are open. You've got to check your law book.
Yep.
But that's one of them, Echo Lake. Also, he's suggesting West Grand Lake. Fishing is open there until October 20th. Mm-hmm. And he says that recent surveys indicate that lake trout population is trending upward, suggesting anglers should have no trouble catching several during a single outing. West Grand salmon should be in peak condition as well, and talking 16 to 19 inches. His tip is, if you're going to troll for the lake trout, not only should you be trolling in shallower water near shore, but you should also try to identify and spend time near any shoals. You know, during the summer, you got to go deep to get those togue. Right, Tenley?
They do.
And but this time of year, they may be on the shoals of shallow water. So that's the latest fishing tip from the Down East Fishing Biologist, and that wraps up Outdoor Digest. And again, our guest tonight is Tenley Schofield, and we'll be talking to Tenley momentarily. We're going to hook up with Steve Dunham, too, who's going to tell us about raising that moose from the well in Pembroke. That must have been an interesting day for Steve. I bet he was tired when he got home.
Well, 5 hours worth of tired.
I think so, yeah. Right now, we have a trivia question. Now, this is a Lulu, and if you get the right answer, now, Tenley's going to read the question to you. If you have the right answer, we're going to make sure you get a copy of my book, Maine Deer Hunter's Logbook. And Tenley, do you have the question?
Yeah. So if you see three men in a pickup dressed from boots to hat, can you tell which one is a real cowboy just from where he sat?
That's kind of poetic. Could we have that one more time?
Yeah.
Can you sing it a little bit?
Yeah, I'll try. Well, I don't know about the singing, but let me read it one more time.
All right.
If you see three men in a pickup dressed alike from boots to hat, can you tell which is a real cowboy just from where he sat?
So you're either going to love this or hate it. 1-800-966-1039. You stay tuned. We'll be right back. Why is your arm raised like that?
Does that mean we have someone with an answer?
We have a caller?
Oh, I'm surprised.
Okay.
Tenley's waiting. Attention is what it was.
We do have a caller, right?
Yes, we do. We have two.
Oh, okay. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors. What's your first name? Where are you calling from?
My name's Gary. I'm calling from Clifton.
Okay, Gary. Nice to have you on board tonight.
Thank you.
You think you have the answer?
I believe I do.
Okay.
Okay. And when there's three people riding the pickup truck, the real cowboy is the one in the middle.
Hey,
he doesn't have to drive, and he doesn't have to open the gate.
You nailed it.
Oh, he got the whole real
cowboy.
That is fantastic. Now, Gary, this was kind of a... I'm a Michael Martin Murphy fan, and this was kind of a long shot, and I figured nobody would have a clue. So how did you know the answer, Gary?
Well, for one thing, I'm almost as old as you are, Paul. So
you can't be that old.
I've listened to country music all my life, so yeah, I knew that.
Good for you. All right,
well, that's awesome.
Congratulations. We're so pleased. We didn't think anybody'd have an answer. In fact, Norm kept shaking his head. Nobody will ever get that. But anyway, you did it. That's a great job.
The second caller had it too.
Oh, they did.
No kidding.
Oh, all right. Anyway, that's great. And Gary, anything else on your mind tonight?
No, not really. I got to do a little moose hunting up in Zone 3, and we came home empty-handed, but we had a great time, and helped out some people.
You had a tough hunt, huh?
Yeah, it was a tough hunt. We didn't see a lot, and I was working through Paul House and House in the Woods up there.
Oh, yeah.
He's been on the show before.
Did you guys go to
us? It's a great operation, and he's a great guy, and I would urge everybody to support that organization.
Yeah, I really think the world of Paul House and that organization up there. So thanks for giving them a shout out. You weren't here because I think you were at Baxter State Park, Paul, but he came in and did the show.
Yeah,
for us.
Yeah, I've met him.
Yeah,
in fact, I can tell you where you were camped. I bet you were right there by 4th St. John Lake.
Yeah, we were on Eagle Lake.
Oh, okay.
Ah, that's Tenley's
name.
Oh, he had another outfit up there I was up there scouting on near 4th St. John, yeah.
That's Eddie and Marion.
Yeah.
I guess the name is slipping my mind.
Yeah.
It's Ed and Marion up there on Eagle
Lodge. Lugden Lodge. I know them. Well.
That's it.
Yes.
Lugden Lodge. And I'm telling you what, those people are fantastic people as well. Just a great time, 8 Light Kings, and it was fantastic.
All right. Well, that's great. Anyway, if you stay on the line, Gary, Norm's going to get your address, and I'll mail that book right out to you, okay?
All right. Thank you very much.
And good work, Gary. Good work.
Thank you.
All right. That's the correct answer. The real cowboy is the one in the middle. He ain't there just by fate. He don't have to drive, and then he don't have to mess with the gate.
Here we go.
All right. Tenley, so nice to have you on board tonight. And as I announced here at the outset of the program, you're a master Maine guide. You ran a Fish River Lodge for many years. And last year you were really honored. They kind of surprised you, the department did, with a Fly Rod Crosby Award.
They really did. I knew I'd been nominated, and when Alexandra Bennett got the award, I was so pleased for her and listened to her lovely speech. And then they called me up, and I was just flabbergasted and didn't know what to say, but I did stumble through something that I said. You know, I still don't even know what I said, but yeah. I was very, very honored.
Well, quite an honor for you.
That was a Lifetime Achievement Award. I just want everyone to know that it's not familiar with that award. A Lifetime Achievement Award, and you got that because of your love of the outdoors, being a guide, a mentor, and a volunteer. So that's a big deal. It's not just one thing. It's her whole lifetime of...
They call it the Fly Rod Crosby Award, but it's an achievement award.
It is a lifetime achievement award. Yeah. It's wonderful.
And I think all of us that do the event, you know, whether we're volunteering or mentoring or serving on committees with the department or whatever, we just kind of do what we do because we love what we do. So, you know, it was very much a surprise, but very nice to be honored and humbled. There were lots of nominees, and there's lots of people I've worked with and volunteered with over the years that are, you know, all.
Tell our listeners who may not know you about your background. How did you wind up being a guide and being involved in a fishing camp?
So I got my guide's license in 1999 and mostly started hunting and guiding over my German Shorthairs doing upland bird hunts, and just always wanted to do the lodge owner thing, and had been working at Bowdoin College for 20 years and said, I can't do an office job for 20 more years. So I sold my house and I bought a lodge up in Eagle Lake.
What did you do at Bowdoin College?
I was an administrator for the food service department.
Yeah?
Yep.
And did you hunt and fish as a child?
Oh, yeah. Grew up in a duck blind with my dad and my grandfather down on the New Meadows River. I grew up in Harpswell on Great Island.
Yeah.
So hunting the diving ducks and the sea ducks and whatnot.
Yeah. So you grew up hunting and fishing both?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you've been guiding for 25 years. And you're a master Maine guide, and so you bought a lodge on Eagle Lake.
Yeah, it was a little fixer upper and needed to, you know, some TLC and rebuild the client base. And I looked at that and I thought, you know, I can do this.
Yeah.
And it was a challenge. You know, you can buy a going business; they're a lot of money. This one I could afford, and it, you know, you start from the ground up and rebuild. And I've enjoyed listening to some of the podcasts from other guides that told their stories of starting out, and I could totally relate.
It's a struggle, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a struggle. Financially, it's very difficult to get started.
Yeah.
But I will say I lived the dream, and I would encourage anybody that has a dream like that to just, you got to go for it.
Yeah.
Because you did it for 14 years. That's a long time.
Yeah, I finally got my feet under me. Then we were going, but yeah.
Did you ever have a time where you just wished you hadn't done it?
Never.
Is that right?
I sometimes joke that I should write a book. You know, you talk about living the dream, and there may have been a few moments of it. This is kind of a nightmare. Yeah. It's a lot more work than I really anticipated, but no, there's never had a regret.
Yeah.
No.
And one of the things I've learned over the years from being in a few sporting camps is that next to the hunting and the fishing, food is very important.
Yep.
And did you have a cook there at the lodge?
Yep.
Did you do the cooking?
Well, it's funny. At the time, my husband was a cook and I was the guide, so people would show up and talk to him about guiding, and he's like, you gotta talk to her. And eventually he got his guide's license and we hired cooks. But
So you ran that lodge for, what did you say, like 20 years?
14.
14 years. Can you tell us what's the best thing that experience you ever had running the lodge, and what was the worst experience you ever had?
I guess I'll start with the worst, because it's such a rare occurrence that I would have a client that I couldn't wait till they went home. And there were, you know, very rare. I could count them on one hand, and it just felt like it didn't matter what I did. This person wasn't going to be happy. But I did my backflips all week and did whatever I could to make them happy. And that was kind of the worst experience, really, because I do what I do. A lot of us do what we do because we're trying to make people's dreams and wishes come true when we take them on these hunting and fishing trips. Yeah. So
did you have to bite your tongue and smile?
Uh-huh. Yep, I'm really good at that. And then, you know, some of the best.
What were some of the best experiences?
Yeah, seeing some of these young kids who show up on a bear hunt, get their first big game animal. There's a woman that got drawn for a moose tag and thought her husband was going to shoot it for her until she decided she wanted to do it. And I worked with her over the summer, coached her on various things like going to the range, you know, pick out your firearm, go to the range, get comfortable with it, watch moose videos, do some imagining, and find the kill zone on that moose and this and that. And it was a cow hunt. She showed up and she flattened a cow at 180 yards.
Did she?
Beautiful,
really?
Perfect shot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Her name was Jean. I'll never forget her. And she was so excited. She wanted me to take a picture of her pointing at the bullet hole in the cow so she could show the guys at work. And I was so proud of her. Yeah.
Yeah. What is the, you know, we were talking, was it last week or a couple of weeks ago about shot placement, but you've had a lot of experience moose guiding.
Mm-hmm.
You said off air that's your favorite.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she's fabulous. I know I'm going to plug you all night long here because I love her. I think she's amazing. When this article came out, I had other guides DM me saying, oh, she is the best moose guide that came out of Northern Maine. So she has a stellar reputation for being a moose guide. So
I was going to say, there's
too.
A lot of that. That is very humbling because
there's
some amazing moose guides. So I'll say maybe best girl guide. I don't know.
I don't know. They said best guide. I believe them.
I really did enjoy it. We talked shot placement, and that was really important to me. I learned early on how important shot placement was, and I put a lot of emphasis on it with my clients and guests that came to the lodge. We would spend a full hour talking about moose behavior and how to read them and where to do that shot placement and listen to your guide, and I will coach you through that. Same with bear. And we lost very few bear, and very rarely ever had a moose that didn't go less than 50 yards or whatever. Yeah, it was very important to me.
During the moose prepping with your clients, did you get them to shoot?
Yep, we always check firearms when they came
for
to camp.
Accuracy and shooting ability.
Yep.
What do you, in your opinion, what are a couple good caliber guns to use on moose, do you think?
Yeah, I hunt with a 308. 30-06 is a good one. Everyone has their personal preferences. It's all about shot placement. When we get splitting hairs about which caliber is better than another, it's all about shot placement.
Yeah.
So
I got a question,
a
real-life question to ask you. I'm going on a moose hunt, and I have a 270 that I've used for years.
Yep.
And I'm confident with it. I was given a 308, one of those classic Savage 308s, and I went to the range today and shot it for the first time, and I fell in love with it. And so I think I'm going to use a 308. And then somebody told me I should. I had some 150 grain bullets that I was using to shoot. Suggested a 200 grain.
Yep.
Would you go along with that?
I'd go with a heavier grain. I always recommended a 180 or better. Yep.
Somebody said
and I also would always recommend that clients hunt with the gun they're most confident with. So I'm just going to have you just reconsider and think about which of the two guns you fell in love with the 308, but you're really confident with the 270. I've had clients bring several guns and have problems during the hunt, and we'd always end up like, let's go back to basics.
Because you get excited, right?
Yep, and they'd miss. And for whatever reason, they just, whether they're flinching on a larger caliber than what they're used to hunting because they think they need to bring that on the moose hunt. So it's just, again, you know, just evaluate that. But that's just my honest opinion.
The problem is that my 270 is a single shot. It's a Ruger 1.
Uh-huh.
And my son made the point. He said, with a moose, Dad, you might want to have a quick backup shot.
Well, here's another funny story I'll share with you about one shot. I only allowed my hunters to load one shot, especially novices.
Okay.
I had a lot of people show up with semi-autos, and they're messing with magazines and wasting time, jammed guns.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, here's your one bullet, put it in and make it count.
No kidding.
Take your time.
That's fascinating.
Yep. And
you did this with most of your sports?
Almost all of, especially the novices and the youth, but
No kidding.
Because they always had a backup. And if the backup was going to shoot also, it's like, don't worry about it. You have a backup.
Yeah.
But make your one shot count. And I believe that this is why, you know, when someone says, what are the average number of shots people take on a moose to put one down? I'm like, my hunter's one, maybe two.
Yeah.
Because it was all about shot placement.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. I mean,
that's fascinating.
I love that.
Never thought of that. Yeah, yeah.
The only reason I love that, when I was younger, and I had just gotten into deer hunting, David Mosher did the same thing with me. One. I'm like, well, how many? It's like one. You get one. Make it count, right?
Yeah. Is that done a lot?
I don't know. That was my technique, and I would take a handful of their shells
Yeah.
Opening morning, give me a handful of your shells. They're like, why? And I said, so if we have to go after a moose, we have plenty.
Yeah.
I will have them at the end of the hunt. I will give them back to you. Because there was a hunt when somebody didn't have them. And it's like, more bullets. And I'm like, yeah, more bullets. Where are they? And they didn't. Yeah. And that's another story for another day.
Well, I like that approach because it puts you in a position where you got to make sure you get the right moment, you know, where how the animal is positioned.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
To get that kind of shot.
Good psychology there.
Yeah.
I really think it is.
Yeah. Now you got me wondering. Maybe I should go back.
Sorry, Paul.
I had already told my son, Scotty, I said, I'm going to hunt.
Well, bring them both.
I'm going to hunt this 308. I shot it well. I like it.
Yeah, if you're comfortable with it.
It's got the hitting power. And I can get a 200-grain bullet through that.
Yeah, no, we laid out a moose with a 308 last year.
Yeah. It's a good round, I think, for deer and moose. Yeah.
180 grain through 308. Yep.
Yeah. What about bear? Do you feel the same way with bear?
Yep.
Same idea, right?
Same calibers, same shot place. You know, it's all about shot placement. Yep. It's all about that one good shot. Let your bear, if you're hunting over bait, let them come in, take a good look at them.
Do you do moose calls with your own voice?
But I'm not doing it here.
Do it.
No.
Oh, come on.
No, it does. It won't mic well. But
No.
We make everybody do it.
We got to take a break. We're going to take a break. We'll give you time to build up your confidence.
Thanks, Paul.
And we can't leave the show without a moose.
A little moose call.
We want to hear a female moose in heat.
Okay? All right. I'll try that.
All right. You promise?
Yeah, I'll try
that. Okay. You folks at home, you got to stick around for that. We'll be back with more right after these messages. Okay, we are back with the Maine Outdoors, and we're so blessed tonight to have with us in the studio Tenley Schofield, who's a career guide. She ran a fishing lodge up at Eagle Lake. She's a master Maine guide. She's received the Fly Rod Crosby Achievement Award last year, member of the SAM Board of Directors, and she's with us, and we've pressed her and pressured her to do a call, and she's willing to do it. So this is Tenley Schofield doing her impersonation of a cow moose in heat.
I think that's great.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I thought that was really good.
Oh, yeah, that was good. Wasn't it, Norm? Huh? Gives you goosebumps.
It was convincing.
It was? Yeah. I thought that was fantastic.
So you have any moose out in the back parking lot when we leave?
I was going,
There you go.
All right. Great job. And again, if you have questions for Tenley, what's the number for folks to call?
It is 1-800-966-1039.
Tenley, you had you're spending a lot of time now mentoring young people and something you really enjoy doing. You said something earlier about taking the ladies on a bear hunt. What was that about?
Yeah, so a few weeks ago, I was up at, actually, we talked about Marion and Ed Lugden with the caller, but I was at their daughter and son-in-law's lodge, Dean's Den, and they specialize in bear hunting, and I did a ladies' hunt. There were four women on the hunt, and all over bait for the week. It was very challenging. Every morning or every afternoon, I loaded them up in the truck. It was pushing 80 degrees. We saw some bears. We didn't kill any bears, but they saw moose on stand. They saw deer. They saw a few bears come in. But yeah, but we turned that slow week into some really good times and educational experiences. Tatiana Whitlock was there. She's the national director of training for A Girl and a Gun. She did a morning pistol class with us. I did a skinning class with a bear that had been trapped by one of the guides. And we did some trophy, quote unquote, hero shot photography, tricks and tick. There we go.
Yeah.
but yeah, so we had a really good time. An impromptu goose hunt one morning.
Ah.
Yeah.
What did you think about, shift gears a little bit, back to moose hunting. Mm. The department is more and more encouraging people, moose hunters, to quarter up the animal and bring it out in pieces and dry dress it. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it's almost like you got to do that now. You got to get off the roads and get in the back country, get in the woods, get in the back of those clear cuts. I think with this year being so dry and hot, you've got to get down in, you know, where there's any kind of water.
Yeah.
The swamps and wetlands, it's going to be cooler there. And hey, they eat aquatic plants. So where are you going to find them? Yeah. I mean, they eat other things too, but when it's hot and dry, like it has been, that's the best place to find them. We talked a little bit about November or late October cow hunt. I always like to look in the maples, the not just the regen maples, but mature aging maples after the first frost. A lot of those cows are on them, stripping the bark with their teeth. If you start seeing that, you know that there are moose around. So it's a great place to hunt late season.
Somebody said the reason that hunt I'm going to be on is so tough is it's post-rut. There's no rutting, so calling doesn't really. Do you think calling cows are sociable? What would be wrong with doing some cow calls during my hunt?
I don't know. They're not a herd animal, so they're they live solitary, and you know, if they were a herd animal, you might try to think of it like you would a turkey, you know, trying to put the flock together, try to pull a herd together. But
you don't think they're that sociable, then?
No. I never use that technique. I use more like, what are they feeding on right now, and that's where I want to be.
Yeah. So you're telling me then that I've got to try to find both water source and some
maples. The swamp maples, maybe, right?
Swamp maples, yeah.
Go hunt the swamp maples.
Any other tips for guys like me that aren't sure how things are going to turn out?
I think my biggest tip to any moose hunter, especially when you have a tough week or things are going slow, is you got to keep your head in the game, because it can change at any moment.
Yeah.
You know, you could be sitting there Thursday late afternoon, last light, and have a cow appear on your hunt. So
how about weather? Do you play the weather?
I hunt whether it's raining or not, or 80 degrees or not.
Yeah,
we're out there. You got to work it all the time.
Do you think, I've noticed like the different front changes affect deer movement. How about moose?
I always loved to hunt when the rain stopped.
Right after the rain.
Yeah. I find that they get up and move. And
yeah, deer that way too, I think. So you had a great hunt with the ladies on the bear hunt.
Yeah.
And you were a bear guide for many years as well as a moose guide.
Yeah.
What was the biggest bear you took in your camp?
405 pounds over bait.
Yeah.
That's a big one. That was a big one.
That was a big one.
That baiting's hard work, isn't it?
It is. It's probably like having a free gym membership, carrying like 35 pounds of bait in a bucket and in and out every day.
Now, I've heard that some bear outfitters have their own little recipe for bait. Did you have your own private little recipe?
I mean, there's no secrets. We feed a lot of carbohydrates. That's what bears are trying to do. They're bulking up to go sleep for the winter, so they want to put on that layer of fat. So a lot of carbohydrates. They love the nuts. So sweets are good.
Yeah. So you didn't have any secret ingredient?
Not really.
All right, we're going to take you folks at home again. We have a number to call if you have a question for Tenley. 1-800-966-1039 is our number, and we welcome your calls anytime. And I think we have a message, right? You have a message for the folks?
Oh, is this the general appliance time?
Is it? Well, I don't know.
We can be. Yeah, let's make it be the general appliance time.
Okay. All right.
General Appliance Services. It is now owned and operated by Gary Coleman, who has been doing service work for General Appliance for 35 years. Nothing has changed. Rebuilt appliances available, parts and service for all makes and models, always reliable, giving you complete support after the sale. You owe it to yourself to come see our gas appliances for your camp. Gas refrigeration, gas lights, gas freezers, gas ranges, and Norm's personal favorite, the composting toilet.
You bet, right the way.
Come visit us at our new location, just two doors up, still here serving first-class customer service at 103 Center Street, Brewer, Maine.
All right, thank you. You were, we were talking earlier, you were also, among your many activities in the outdoors, you were what I call a musher.
Yeah.
Somebody who had sleds, dog sleds.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so briefly, it started out with some lady friends who we all had German short hairs, and we were running sprint races just coming off bird hunting season with our dogs in great shape. And I enjoyed that, but a sprint race with six dogs only takes about 20 minutes, and I wanted more runner time on the sled in the winter. So I ended up getting into the Alaskan Huskies and mid-distance racing and doing 30 and 60-mile races, and that kind of morphed into the Can-Am 250. I ran that 1 year. Yeah, I loved it. I say that dog mushing is to snowmobiling what sailing is to power boating. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And you don't still have those dogs, right?
Nope. When I got out of mushing, I sold them all to either other racing teams or some recreational teams.
That's got to be kind of a grueling thing physically, isn't it?
It was like having a second full-time job. We would start end of August, early September, as soon as temperatures would cool down. We'd train in the morning with an ATV on bare ground.
How does that work? Explain that
to
us.
Yeah, so we'd hook up our dogs to a big, long gang line and hook them up. They were hooked up to an ATV, and we would put it in neutral and just let them haul it and build muscle, long, slow miles.
They were hauling an ATV in neutral.
Yep.
I'll be doggone. Yep. Did you know that, Norm? I never heard of that.
No, but it also meant somebody had to be on the ATV, too.
That would be me.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But they would become so strong that you could put that ATV, put the brake on, stop it, set the brake so it wouldn't roll, and they would haul it.
Yeah, right. How many dogs does it haul an ATV like that?
Six, eight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was running 12. Yeah. But, yeah.
And I've always wondered, I saw that movie, I love that movie, Jack London's story about White Fang.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How do you determine who the lead dog is going to be, and how does that work?
They have to be fast, because they've got to be faster than every dog behind them.
Yeah.
So they have to set the pace.
Do they actually compete with the way it was in the Jack London movie?
Yeah, not so much like that. That's just cinema.
It was
but
a poetic license.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. But no, we look for a dog that's smart. They got to be willing to take direction, but also be independent because they're running up front. They got to handle stress because they've got all the whole team running behind them, breathing down their back.
Yeah.
So that's where that speed factor comes in.
So it is a really special dog. You try different dogs to figure out which is the one to lead?
I expected all my dogs to run and lead. It doesn't mean they were lead dogs, because they might not be very fast, but let's just say in a long, grueling race, your leader gets tired, you want to give him a break, you pull him out, and you put another dog up there that will at least run and lead. So I gave every dog an opportunity to lead, and on a team of 12, I probably had 8 that would lead.
Some of them wouldn't.
No, some of them just didn't like the pressure.
Do the dogs respect the leader? Do they show any kind of dog deference to?
Not really. I mean, there's a lot of romantic notions about pack order and alpha dogs and this and
it's
that.
It's all a bunch of BS, right?
A little bit. Yeah. The alpha dog is the musher, trainer, the one that puts the team together.
But you got to find the alpha dog, put him up front like that.
But
right?
It's not. Yeah, it's just the fastest one.
Oh.
So what about the one that's closest to you in the...
The wheel dog?
Yeah.
Yeah,
the
they're
dog.
The strong one.
Oh, they're the strong dog.
Yeah, they're like the bodybuilder guys they're going to hunker down and pull hard.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So there's a lot of training. And do you feed them a special diet?
Yeah. So we would feed a dry kibble that's designed specifically for sled dogs and also raw meat and fat.
So they get treated well, right?
Oh, yeah.
They
eat better than most house pets, and they're probably cared for better than many house pets.
Yeah.
No, they're athletes. They're elite athletes.
But you can't treat them as a house pet, though, right?
There are a few people that have had them in the house. Mine preferred to live as a team out in the dog yard.
Yeah.
And if I had an injured dog, they just couldn't wait to get better because I'd bring them in and rehabilitate them and then they'd go back out, but they couldn't wait to get back out to the dog.
But you don't treat them as pets. They're
not
working.
Not really. No, they're working dogs. Yeah. They were working dogs. I mean, lovely dogs. They're very friendly. And every once in a while, I'd have a favorite that got to ride up front in the truck with me instead of the dog box.
Yeah. Do you feel the same way about gun dogs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Same way?
Kind of. I mean, I think gun dogs become more house pets, obviously, for obvious reasons. I think that they are... Having owned both, I find that gun dogs really want to please you personally, whereas sled dogs just want to run.
Just want to run.
They just want to run.
Yeah.
And that makes them happy. But my working hunting dogs are working to make me happy. So
what is your gun dog of choice?
Now, I have a little English Cocker Spaniel named Gritty, and she's a flushing dog, and I just switched over from running German short-haired pointers for like 30 years. Got a bad knee. I don't get around in the woods like I used to, so having a close little working flushing dog has been really fun. Yeah.
If you had a choice between a setter and a pointer, which would you take?
Well, of course, a pointer.
Okay.
I knew you were saying. You're talking to a pointer girl here, yeah.
Yeah, I had an English setter, and I loved her.
No, they're all lovely, though. Yeah, they really are. I've always been a pointer.
She was not a great bird dog, but I loved her.
They're pretty.
And I let her stay in the house and sleep in the
bed. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we've got a short hair that sleeps on the end of the bed. And
yeah, yeah.
I'm sure Gritty will move in when Tinker passes away.
So you get all this time under your belt for hunting and fishing in the great outdoors. Any advice you have for young women today who are thinking they might like to get involved in the outdoors?
Yeah, there's a lot of women that are already out there doing it. The Maine Women Hunters social media page is a great thing to be aware of and become part of. It's a super supportive group. I'm all about just get out there and try it. Just get out there and try it, and you'll run into people, go to the gun shop, talk to people there, like, oh, who in the neighborhood hunts? And they'll give you names. So, yeah.
All right. We're going to hook up with Steve Dunham, as we promised at the beginning of the show. And Steve is a wildlife biologist, a regional biologist down east. And he was involved in saving a large moose. Looked like, was it a cow? Cow moose.
No, I think it was a bull.
It was a bull.
Yeah.
That fell into a well in Pembroke. And right now, as we speak, engineer Norm is endeavoring to make a telephone connection with Steve Dunham. And I can tell by his look on his mustache that he has hooked up with Steve Dunham. His mustache always twitches when he makes the right hookup. Right? You got Steve right there? Hi, Steve. Good evening,
Steve.
Hey,
how's it going?
Sorry we're late getting to you. We got wrapped up here with our guest. Nice to have you on board tonight, Steve, and we've got a few minutes here. Can you tell us, you're the regional biologist down there in Machias, right?
Yeah, the office moved to Jonesboro in 2000, but yeah,
okay.
It's Machias area.
Okay, well, I'm showing my age, I can tell. Anyway, Steve, I heard by the grapevine that you were involved in helping rescue a moose from a well down in Pembroke. Tell our listeners about that, would you?
Yeah, so a couple weeks ago now, it was a Wednesday, I think, got a call. Right, you know, it's kind of one of those days. It was a little bit on the slower side, and got a call from our moose biologist that somebody had reported a moose in a well in Pembroke, and asked if, you know, I had if I had any chemical mobilization gear, and I said, oh, I do, and I'm definitely closer than anybody else. So I said I'd run up, and there was a warden kind of already on his way, and so I didn't really know what to expect. You know, you get the call, and
yeah,
you're not sure what to picture. I pictured a smaller well, so my first thought was, because they said they had a piece of equipment on site, I figured, well, if you could just kind of pull it up, you know, it's hard on the animal, but if it's quick enough, you can get on them, you know, pull them up and let them go. I know Joey Gardner and some other folks did that with a moose years ago that fell through a bridge. Or maybe it was Joe McBride. Moose had fallen through a bridge, and they basically just got straps under it and picked it up out of the bridge and set it down. But
so this was a conventional well the moose fell into?
Yeah, it was a dug well. So basically, some folks had opened a shed making business, and they put it on a piece of land. They'd cleared a section, built a pad, and they were building sheds there, and they didn't realize there was a dug well in the woods in a section that hadn't been cleared yet. And so it was thick, you know, regenerating aspen and alder, and you know, they just never saw it. And I guess Cole, who actually was the young man who was building the shed, threw a piece of wood because he was frustrated. And
did we lose him?
Ooh, what happened?
No. Or something over there, and they went over, and they're like, "Oh my God, there's a moose in the ground." You know, they're looking down at a 500-pound animal in a hole in the ground that's about 8 feet in diameter.
Yeah,
maybe a little less, maybe closer to like 6 or 7, but I could spread my arms out in it, anyways.
Yeah.
And it was about 8 feet deep, so and lined with stones, and it had water in it, which, you know, in a drought, it's pretty impressive.
Moose is thrashing around in the water.
Yeah, so we couldn't see how much water was in there, but I could hear it.
Yeah.
When the call came in, it said dry well.
Yeah.
But it wasn't dry.
Yeah.
So
what's the first move you make there? You going to tranquilize it?
Yeah, that was that's what we had to do. So, well, the first thing I did, you know, when I on our way, I told the warden, I said, "Hey, just get make sure," because he was going to get there faster than I was. I just said, "Make sure everyone's back away from it, so we're not stressing it out." And they did that, and it was great because there was all this vegetation around it, so it was basically isolated. I'm sure I could hear everybody, but you know, it just kind of was stuck.
So you got you tranquilize it, and then you got to put some straps under its belly, or what?
Yeah, so I walked up and I assessed the situation, and it was, you know, it was moving around quite a bit, so we had to tranquilize it. It wasn't wedged, but of course we were nervous about it laying down. But you know, it's not like the movies when you drug them, they don't just tip over and pass right out. You know,
so
it takes
somebody
a little while.
did somebody crawl down in the well to put the straps around the moose?
Yeah, that was me. So what I did is I tranquilized it with a syringe pole. So the warden distracted it and got him turned around and facing him. And I came up behind and reached out with about a 6 foot long metal pole with a syringe on the end of it and jabbed it in the hindquarter.
So he was pretty doped up. Pretty doped up when you put the straps under his belly or what?
Oh yeah, he was out. Yeah, out like a light. So I came back after about 5-10 minutes. It was a little more than 5 minutes, a little less than 10.
Yeah.
And he had settled down on his haunches and put his, you know, was keeping his head out of the water. Yeah. So it got kind of wedged behind him because he didn't have a lot of space, which was perfect.
Okay.
So his head was wedged out of the water. His antlers were kind of in the rocks.
Okay, well, we're running low on running out of time here, Steve. Real quick, how did you hoist him up?
Excavator. So we jumped in the hole, put straps under him, and we hoisted him up with a small Bobcat excavator.
Oh, fantastic! Wow,
which is on site. So thank you for all the help on the scene.
And the moose had no injuries or anything. He was perfectly okay to continue on. Or did you have to do some first aid or?
No obvious injuries, and there were no lacerations, no broken bones that we could see, and he ran off, was putting weight on all his legs when he ran off.
That's
so
good.
I don't think it was in long.
Great job, Steve, and congratulations to you. Now, will you get hazardous duty pay, extra pay this month for that?
I don't think so, but that's all right. It wasn't too bad.
Okay. Well, good work.
Not bad.
Good job, Steve. And thanks for talking with us. We're sorry we're a little late getting to you.
No worries. Have a good night.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yep, bye-bye. Yep. All right.
That's amazing that they got that moose out of there with no injuries or anything.
And I bet when he woke up that morning, he was having his coffee, he had no idea what he had in store for him. That's great. So anyway, how much time we got left here, engineer? Another minute?
Minute and a half.
Yeah. Tenley, anything else we should mention here before we wrap up?
Oh, I guess, you know, it's the best time of the year. It's hunting season. So, you know, go forth and enjoy, be safe, have fun. And it's not always about filling a tag or putting something in the bag. It's really more about the memories and the time we share.
Yeah, and you must have a lot of them behind you.
I do. I'm so blessed.
Yeah, we all are that enjoy the great outdoors. Well, it's been really nice to have you on board. We wish you the very best of luck. And you're a member of the SAM board, and that's an important role you have. Do you enjoy that?
I do, and I'm involved with the Outdoor Education Center. We have our grand opening on October 19th at 2 p.m. It's at the right on that Belfrost Road, just before you get to SAM, Churchill Road there. Anybody listening, we'd love to have you join and see what we're all about.
Now, when is that again?
October 19th at 2 p.m.
At 2 p.m.
Sunday.
Right down there near the SAM headquarters, right?
Yep. Yep.
All right, that's wonderful. And best of luck to you and everything else you're doing. And congratulations again for being selected for the Fly Rod Crosby Award. And, of course, you know who Fly Rod was, right?
Yes, and we have Friends of Fly Rod Crosby. So check us out on social media. We're trying to raise money for a bronze statue that will be placed in front of the new Inland Fisheries and Wildlife Building.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. I didn't know that.
It's another thing we can talk about sometime.
Yeah. All right, that's great. And what is that again?
The Friends of Fry Rod Crosby. And we're doing a fundraiser to build a life-size bronze statue that would be placed in front of the new Inland Fisheries and Wildlife Building.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, she's quite a lady. I have her book. Have you read her book?
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got to have a copy of that. Oh, it's your guide, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Next week, our guest is going to be...
The people from Great Pond.
The folks from Great Pond are going to come back.
That's a great story down there.
Yeah, that plot is thickening. We're going to hear more about that. And we'll see you all next week right here on
The Maine Outdoors.